As you heard in the song, the hymn we just sang, and the children's story, Mary had some really good reasons for getting out of Nazareth. She was pregnant, but she wasn't married. So perhaps she wanted to escape from the prying eyes and the acid tongues of her neighbors. I think I would. Perhaps she wanted to go visit someone to whom she could talk, who knew a little bit more about what was going on than she did. Because you see, when the angel came to announce that she was going to have a child, he also says to her that her kinswoman, her cousin, let's say, Elizabeth, who had wanted a child for years and years and years and years, was finally going to have one, and she was 6 months ahead of Mary in that process. So perhaps she made that long journey from Galilee down to the Judean hill country in order to escape something, but also to find something, to find someone who would understand. Now, Luke gives us a clue as to what she was thinking along the way. Mary would not have traveled by herself. She would have traveled with a male companion, probably a relative, a father or a brother or someone. And along the way, I don't know if she talked to her traveling companion about this or if she kept it to herself, but the clue that Luke gives us is that Mary is going to sing a song when she arrives at Elizabeth's house that is very much like a song we heard several weeks ago in the story of Hannah. Hannah's situation is like Elizabeth's. Hannah had wanted a child, wanted a child, wanted a child. She finally has a child, but she has promised to give that child back to the service of God. Elizabeth, too, had wanted and wanted and wanted a child. Finally, having a child, he's to be a Nazarite. He is to be given back to the service of God. Mary, very likely, I think, was remembering Hannah's song as she traveled that long way from Nazareth down to the hill country of Judea, down near Jerusalem. Because her song reflects so many of the same themes that Hannah's song does. We'll get to that in a minute, though. Galileans were not necessarily welcomed in Judea. You know, there was only one place in the world where you could worship properly, and that was the temple in Jerusalem, where you could offer sacrifices to atone for your sins. And so the closer you lived to the precinct of the temple, the more religious you were. And of course, Galilee was way up north. And so when Mary comes down, she speaks with a different accent. You know how those people who come from up north talk? They have an accent. We don't, right? She would have been considered perhaps less religious for living further away. After all, she is going to have a baby. She's not married. Zechariah serves at the temple. He is a person of position and status, which would mean that Elizabeth, too, was a person of position and status. Mary was the lowest of the low, a peasant girl from up in the north, pregnant, unmarried. But Elizabeth welcomes her. Not only does she welcome her, but she offers blessing all around. As soon as Mary enters the house where Elizabeth is and offers a greeting, the baby that Elizabeth is carrying, whom we come to know is named John, kicks. Now, I don't know if it's the first kick she's felt or just the strongest kick she's felt, but she interprets that as her child leaping for joy in the presence of Mary's child, the child of an unmarried, pregnant teenager. And so, Elizabeth starts offering blessings all around. Blessed are you among women, she says to Mary. Blessed is the fruit of your womb. A little bit later, she will say, blessed is the one who believed what God promised. I think referring to herself. Because after all, when Zechariah didn't believe, he was silenced for a while. Elizabeth, who believed, was blessed. So in the presence of this visitor, she starts scattering blessings all around. Mary's blessed. Her child is blessed. Elizabeth is blessed. And then Mary breaks into her song. My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit gives thanks to God my Savior. We hear it every Advent. We have a name for it, the Magnificat, which is simply the first word in Latin of this song. And yet often we don't listen very carefully. Mary starts by saying that God has chosen the lowest of the low, herself, in order to bring to the world something that is beyond price. She says those blessings that were being shared with her and her child and Elizabeth are going to be passed on to all generations, generation after generation. Then she says how God is going to do that. And that's where the trouble starts. God is going to scatter the mighty in the imaginations of their hearts, in their arrogance. God is going to take the powerful and pull them down, and take the lowly and lift them up. Those who were rich and full will be empty, and those who were empty will be filled. God is going to come in and turn the world upside down, setting things right. Now, a lot of us find this threatening. I think that's why we don't listen to it, because we are the proud, and we are the powerful, and we are the rich, and we are the full. When you look at the rest of the world, we are all of those things. And so, at first, it seems like God is just going to turn the tables and who knows, maybe they will treat us as badly as we treated them. But let me give you another framework with which to view this. That doesn't really set things right if you just switch the people who are in power. I think something else is at work here. I think that the proud are scattered in the imaginations of their hearts and the powerful are pulled down because they have never experienced what it's like to be powerless, to express your need for food or housing or clothing or medical care and have nobody listen. They need to experience that. And those who have been powerless, who've had no voice or at least no voice that has been heard, need to experience what it's like to have everything you need and more. Those who are full need to experience what it's like to be empty. I'm embarrassed by how many times in my life I've said, you know, I'm hungry. I have never been hungry a day in my life. I have never had a day, even when I was growing up in a house trailer as a child, that I did not know that I would have something to eat. There are people who do not know that, however. And in this song of Mary's, this one simple song, turning the world upside down, she's suggesting that the way God is going to pass on blessing is that those who have been full all along will experience what it's like to be empty. That's why we do the 30-hour famine with the youth, so they can get just a tiny taste of what it's like to live as one of those who can't choose whether to eat or not. To eat. In turning the tables, those who are powerful get to experience powerlessness, and they find out they are kin to those who are powerless. Those who are powerless begin to experience what it means to have and exert power. They are related to those. We find our kinship to the other, those other people. It's too easy to dismiss those others, whoever they happen to be. To dismiss the full or the empty. the powerful or the powerless. Because you see, we are all in this together. We are brothers and sisters, or at least cousins like Mary, who is essentially powerless and the lowest of the low, and Elizabeth, who has been blessed with a child after many years, who is part of the elite, shall we say. We are just as related as they are. And a part of this season is a quest to find that kinship. Let me tell you a story about kinship. Growing up, I heard a lot of stories from my great aunt. I've told you that. Some of those stories were passed on by my mom. Some of those stories were about my great-grandfather, George Washington Cherry, growing up in Stewart County. Some of those were about the early settlement of that region. Some of those were about the relations between the native peoples and the settlers in that region. Yet there was a story, there was a piece of a story that I was not told until after I was 40 years old. I had heard parts of it along the way. It seems there was a man named Bradley Self. Every time his name was mentioned in our family, he was called that old Bradley Self. Now, as I got older, I learned why he was not looked upon with favor in my family. Because you see, Bradley Self, living in the era prior to the Civil War in Stewart County, Tennessee, had two wives. Not in succession, but at the same time. In the same household. Had children by both. The two wives were sisters. Now, the good folks in Stewart County had no knowledge of such a living arrangement before this. Now, they had read in the Bible about the law of levirate marriage, where if your brother dies, you take his widow into your household and marry her and have children with her so his name will continue. But they knew they were not Old Testament Hebrews. What they didn't realize is that the custom among the Cherokee people was fairly similar, and that Bradley Self and both of his wives, the Taylor sisters, were all Cherokee. What I was not told till I was after 40 years old is that Bradley Self was also my great-great-grandfather. From the line of Bradley Self and the older of the two Taylor sisters, whose name, interestingly enough, was Elizabeth Taylor. How about that? And so that was our family's little secret, and I think we waited so long because there was some shame associated with that, both because of the circumstances and the ethnicity. But as a kid who grew up playing cowboys and Indians and thinking he knew which side he was on, it put me in quite a dilemma. Because you see, now I had a foot in both worlds. And those who had been described as other, as enemy, were now part of the family. Or I was part of theirs. I think that's what this season's all about. Discovering that kinship. That those we have defined as other are actually part of the family. 2 weeks ago, I talked about some of the difficulties that arise and have arisen in encounters between African-American young men and police officers. And I think at least part of that is due to the fact that police officers don't have the opportunity to get to know the people they are to protect. And the people in the community don't get a chance to get to know those officers who are supposed to be there to protect them. Last week, we talked a little bit about an interpreter, an interrogator in World War II who interrogated Japanese prisoners. And the reason he was effective was because he saw them as kin. He didn't see them as other or enemy. He saw them as kin. Because you see, in this season, we learned that we're all kin. And it doesn't matter what race you are, It doesn't matter what country you came from. It doesn't matter what language you grew up speaking. It doesn't matter what sexual orientation you were born with. It does not matter what difference there is between you and someone else. We are blood kin. That same blood that coursed through the umbilical cord of Mary feeding Jesus until he was born is that same blood that was spilled when spikes were driven through his wrists and his feet and made us blood kin. Every single person on earth. And so for this season, that's good news, isn't it? In fact, it's the good news. Thanks be to God.